In order to retire successfully, you'll need vision. You'll also need a plan to execute that vision. Welcome to Retirement Pathfinder with Barbara Lane and Phil Gusky. On today's show, we'll give you the tools you need to navigate unique challenges you'll face in retirement. It's time to chart your financial future. Retirement Pathfinder starts now.
Glad to have you back on the Retirement Pathfinder. I am Ben George. They are Barbara Lane and Phil Gusky, and Retirement Income Planning Specialists at Pathfinder Wealth Management, serving Rockford. And today we're going to run through a pretty good topic that I think that you'll be of interest, and it's surviving the next market crash. Lessons we've learned along the way. Of course, we've learned a lot of lessons in 2020. We still have some leftover from 2008 as well, but the key is being prepared the next time this happens, and it will happen at some point. So we're going to do that today on this episode, but let me welcome in Barbara and Phil. How are you both doing today?
We're doing great. How are you, Ben?
Doing good. Doing real good.
Doing well. Just making it through the summer okay. How about y'all?
Yeah. I've had humidity here quite a bit in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to complain come November, December, so.
Yeah, I mean, how could you, right? We'll take the heat while we have it, right? That's the key.
Yeah.
But have y'all been able to get out of town at all? I know we've talked about it a little bit, but with everything going on, it's been hard to leave the house, really.
Actually, Phil went on vacation, and guess where he came?
Where's that?
In the office.
that's not vacation.
He's in the office 2 out of 5 days a week that week. But
well, it's primarily because I didn't have any internet connection at home.
Okay.
So I had to come in.
We'll give you a pass. But I actually am looking forward to a vacation this fall. I had to cancel one because of all this. It was scheduled for the end of April. And I actually just had a girlfriend that moved out to Charleston, South Carolina. So now that she moved there, I might make some trips there. She was a close friend. So nice. That should be fun. That's an area I want to explore more than I have. I've just very briefly visited there.
Good. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
How about you, Phil?
No, haven't gone any place, not planning to. We're just kind of sitting on the farm watching the corn grow day by day. Stuff is growing so fast, you can just watch it inch up. You know, it's really kind of fun.
With the rain and humidity.
Yeah, it's been really, really, really wet around here, which is good.
That is good. Well, how's everything going in terms of COVID for you and around the office and your clients? Anything new to report on that front? Everybody kind of dealing with it day by day as best they can?
Well, I just have to tell you that I'm encouraged by some of the news that I'm seeing. And, you know, we're having clients coming in. We never had a waiting room full of clients anyway. So we're practicing the safety that we need to here. And I just wanted to point out a couple of things with regard to COVID, because I had all these numbers that I was looking at from an economist that we follow. And I thought, instead of that, I want to just talk about what's positive out of all of this that I see, with the exception of one statistic that I want to point out, and that is at the peak of our deaths. So on Sunday, April 19th, we had a peak of deaths of 1,733. On Sunday, June 28th, we had a total of 273. So that's down 84%. So I was encouraged by that, because positive doesn't mean symptoms and doesn't mean death. But this is interesting. In the New York Times, the number of new COVID-19 cases across the country are among people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. Well, protesters are predominantly in that age group. So that was rather interesting, which is we kind of assumed that and could very well be true.
Right.
But I was encouraged by what's positive in our economy. If we look at the second straight month of job gains that we have now, we had a highest unemployment rate of about 19%. Now we're down to about 11. And we have Walmart, who's added 200,000 jobs. We have Panera Bread, who's added items to their menu because of increased drive-thrus. We've got Chipotle and Starbucks. They've increased in their loyalty programs. And I'm proud to say that I help participate with Starbucks, because I go there every day for their iced coffee. But and then we have businesses that have changed their models temporarily, which is a smart move. MyPillow is making masks. You have GM that's making ventilators. You have American Airlines that's doing cargo-only flights. But I just think that we will emerge as a stronger economy from this, because human beings are amazingly resilient. And entrepreneurs are coming up with ideas now that wouldn't have been if it weren't for the pandemic. Sadly, some businesses will close and some won't reopen at all. But it may happen sooner than later to fully recover, but that may take a while. And I'm just encouraged by the fact that I think we'll prosper from this.
Incidentally, Barb, we got a message from a friend of ours, a financial planner down in Texas, that did a report on the flu versus the COVID-19 numbers over the last few years. And this is kind of interesting. And this information comes from the Texas Health and Human Services Department. And in 2018, they had 165,000 tests that were conducted for flu. Now, this is just common flu. And they it's a higher number. They had 11,900 deaths. Did the same thing again in 2019, and they had 192,000 tests, and they had 10,000 deaths. So it went down a bit. But this year, under the COVID-19 tests, they've had 2.6 million people tested, 250,000 people reported positive, 3,000 deaths. So you wonder if maybe the deaths are not being overreported. We don't know for sure. The year hasn't gone through entirely at this point, but it is kind of interesting to see that there are similar numbers for reportings and deaths for just common flu in other years. You know, so I don't know what to make of this at this point, but I thought it was very encouraging to kind of see that the number of deaths per thousand are going down substantially and even down lower than the actual common flu.
Well, there's so much news out there, too, about if someone is in the hospital or in the nursing home and they have various other health issues, you know, they're really being encouraged strongly to report that as a COVID if they had the slightest, response as far as being positive for COVID. But so, you know, you don't really know how much the numbers are skewed. But that was an interesting statistic, though.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the problem is you just don't know what to believe. There's just so much. Yeah, everybody's got an opinion on both sides and every which way you look. But I think it's important to continue to take an optimistic approach to things and not just get weighed down by just all the negativity that's out there and surround you all the time. It's, you know, it's important to stay positive and look for the silver lining. So I'm glad y'all did.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk today about some things that we've learned during this. And we're not out of the woods yet by any means, but the stock market has obviously had a nice rebound, and it's come back quite a bit since March when it was at some of its lows. But yeah, we want to provide everybody with a bit of a survival guide, some lessons that we've learned for the next time that stock market crash comes around. And, you know, we it's fresh in our mind, you know, but even 2008, you go back that far, there's a lot that we can learn there as well. And we don't know when the next one's going to come, right? We don't know what it's going to look like. Is the virus going to have an impact in that? Who knows? What's going to lead up to it? The elections later this year. We still haven't crossed that bridge yet. So there's still a lot still happening in 2020, but we don't know what it's going to look like or what's going to cause it. But we do know we can follow some basic rules to ensure that we don't lose our shirts the next time that graph tumbles downwards. So let's run through four of these things today on our survival guide. And let's begin with the understanding that you need to know, you got to be certain of how much risk you're exposed to.
This is really important, Ben, in terms of preparing for the next market crash, which will happen. I mean, it's just a matter of inevitability. But we have to understand two things. We have to understand, number one, what do we mean by risk? And number two, how can we measure risk? How can we measure it? And so if I were to ask the average person out there, let's say, Ben, I ask you, hey, I've got this risky investment that I'd like you to consider investing in. Would you buy it?
Sure.
Maybe.
Ben, absolutely not.
Yeah, I trust you, Phil.
Oh, yeah. You're a nice guy.
I've heard that too.
Yeah. I don't understand this stuff, but I like you, so I'll buy it. No, that's the wrong reason to buy. But, you know, 99% of the people would say no. Why? Because the average person out there, when they consider the term risk, it means the possibility of total loss. So what they're going to do is they're going to equate the idea of possibility with probability. Mm-hmm. So they probably are going to lose their money if it's a risky investment. But in the world of investing, it's not an absolute probability. Risk is defined as a variance from the mean. Now, that's kind of a technical term. Another way to look at it is, in other words, it's volatility. It's the roller coaster effect going up and down. And so over any given period of time, how much does an investment go up or down, have positive periods or negative periods around its average? That's what we want to measure. That's how we measure risk. And every investment out there has a way to measure. We can measure that mathematically. So if we have an investment, let's say mutual fund X, that has an average return over 30 years of 8%, does that indicate that that return will be a straight line 8% per year?
Absolutely not.
Of course not. Some years it'll be higher, some years it'll be lower. So let's take this information and see if we can use it to help prepare us for the next market downturn. So real life situation, real life investment, S&P 500 index, which I think most people are familiar with, the top 500 companies in the United States. So during the past 40 years, the average return has been about 10%. However, like we've talked about, We have ups, some years higher, some years lower. In fact, the most drop that we've had over the last 40 years is down 37%, but it's just been as high as 43%. So you can see that there may be a great possibility of range. So if we have 10%, it goes down, it goes up. Well, the statisticians, those real smart people that do the math on this stuff, give us an idea of what they call an average range for the 500, index 500 over a 10, 20, 30-year period of time. And they can do it with an accuracy of about 90%. But that average range is what they call a standard deviation. And so, in other words, what deviates from the average? So if we understand what the standard deviation is or that range is, we can decide for ourselves which kind of an investment or what type of a range we can be comfortable with. So the range for the S&P 500 over a 40-year period of time is 17%. What does that mean? Well, it can be plus 10% plus 17% or 10% minus 17%, 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. Now, some people, Barb, they feel comfortable with that kind of a roller coaster, okay? For some clients, they're willing to weather that type of a roller coaster because they understand that risk and return are related. So the greater the risk, the greater the potential return. Mm-hmm. So they're willing to kind of suffer through it. But if you're within, let's say, 3 to 5 years of retiring, would you want to take on that much of a risk? But the problem is we don't know when we're going to experience these downturns. Will it happen next year, 5 years, 10 years? So we have to have an understanding that risk is only a description of volatility and that it can be measured numerically, mathematically. And it's the place we start when we want to build a portfolio that will help cushion us in a down market.
Yeah. You know, I'd say most people don't know what the risk is. They invest in a 401k and they really don't know what that number is. Most of the people that come into our office have no idea what their entire holdings of everything that they own, what that standard deviation number is, but it's important because it's all going to work together someday. But it's so important to know because then you can have expectations for both up and down markets. We see people that when we ask, well, what kind of investor are you? They'll say, well, I'm a conservative investor. But when we analyze their holdings, what we often find most of the time is they're usually in a growth portfolio, which means they're carrying much more risk than they even thought they had. But the reason that we believe it's important to know a few things about investing is so you know how much the market can increase and how much it can drop by, and you'd be less skittish and stay the course. Now, our clients, if you're listening, if you don't stick with your current mix of assets, then you never reach your average. I want to let our listeners know, though, you may not be in the most desirable mix of assets. So if that's the case, then call us.
Absolutely.
But the average return on your investment is only as good as you being in it. Dalbar Research tells us that the average investor is buying and selling about every 3 years. So if you understand how your portfolio is designed, you'll be more likely to hang in there during times like this and not panic and sell out. That's the biggest mistake, is getting out and going to cash.
Yeah, no question. And when you're talking about getting out and selling along the way, you know, when the market's going well, you don't want to sell. You continue to have visions of bigger and bigger gains. But it's important along the way, one of the lessons that we've learned is you need to protect yourself by taking some of those gains as you go.
Yeah, so if we look at a few areas for protecting your gains, not necessarily just taking cash off the table, but here's how you can do that. Here's four areas. First of all, diversification. One of the cornerstones of modern portfolio theory is diversification. So it's owning a large number of investments in more than one asset class, the right type of investments, not sectors, meaning, you know, financial and healthcare and so forth, which leads to the second thing that you can do, and that's to have your portfolio with a mix of non-correlating assets. So you've got small companies and large, you've got growth, you've got value, and they react differently to changes in the markets, and they smooth out the volatility. So small doesn't move in the same direction as large. So non-correlating assets theoretically provide more balanced returns. So all asset classes don't move in the same direction at the same time, which is the purpose of diversification. Now, dividends, this is another way of taking your gains off the table. Studies have shown that companies that pay generous dividends tend to grow earnings faster. So faster growth leads to higher share prices, which generates capital gains. So when stock prices are falling, the cushion that dividends provides increases your overall return, providing less volatility, and dividends are reinvested. But lastly, and most importantly, this is what we do at our firm, is rebalancing. So what this does is it keeps your portfolio diversified like when it was designed for you in the beginning. We just recently rebalanced portfolios. So what's up in a down market is your fixed income. So we sold off the fixed income that was high, and we replenished what dropped in value, which would have been stocks. And we do that periodically, and it might be quarterly, it might be a couple times a year, but we do that so that we have the investment mix that you originally asked for when you invested with us. So rebalancing is very important.
Yeah, Barb, one of the questions that clients will often ask us is, well, gosh, Phil, is it time to take money off the table, take our profits off the table, as if to say, you know, they're like gamblers sitting at a poker table, you know, and we've got our winnings, let's take them over, put them in the bank or something. And of course, we don't recommend that. What we recommend people do is the way to take profits off the table properly is, like Barb says, by rebalancing. In other words, you don't want to take and put it on the side where it won't earn more money. What we do is we want to take those profits, rebalance. In other words, you take the highs and you buy lows. You buy the positions that are down in value. Because the whole key of investing properly and being successful as an investor is to buy low and sell high. So what we want to do is take those profits and buy lower positions, lower priced holdings, and so they'll come up in value. So rebalancing is the key to successfully taking profits off the table.
All right. Well, you touched on this a little bit, Barb, on diversification, and you kind of led into this a little bit, but I think this is the kind of the next thing that we really need to pay attention to in terms of preparing for that next stock market crash is to make sure you're balanced. So let's talk about a little bit further, how you guys work with your clients to make sure they are diversified appropriately.
Yeah. Ben, one of the things that our parents told us, I'm sure you heard this from your parents, is this advice: never place all your eggs in one basket.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what do they mean by that? They mean diversify. You know, what if somebody steals the basket or the eggs fall on the floor? You know, you lose all your nest eggs and all is gone. You know, so again, to understand and protect ourselves against a down market, we have to define terms. And there's two terms in this particular sentence. You know, be sure you diversify. Number one, diversification needs to be explained. And the next word, appropriately, needs to be explained as well. So first, let's talk about diversification. It's simply the practice of spreading your investments around so your exposure to any one asset class is limited. Okay, so here's a good example of diversification. You tell me, Ben, if it's good or not. All right, you
okay.
ready?
Let's do it.
So a client comes in with a portfolio of 100 stocks. Here we go, 100 stocks. They come in. In effect, you know, he's building his own mutual fund and wants for me to bless his efforts. In other words, you know, he just looks at it and he says, hey, Phil, take a look at this. And I just want to get your opinion, as he says proudly. so I look at the portfolio and see that he has 100 companies. Okay, he has 100 companies. I'm widely diversified, right? And my response is, well, yes, you are diversified, but not appropriately diversified. Why? Because all your stocks are invested in technology companies. What's wrong about that?
I remember people coming in the 90s and they thought they were diversified and
yes.
They were all in tech companies, which likely it was one asset class, which moves in the same direction, of course.
Yeah, of course. And so they're diversified, but not appropriately diversified. So he's betting that the technology sector will exceed the other 19 groups or asset classes available for returns. So in essence, Barb, what he's doing is he's saying, hey, I'm going to neglect the other 19 groups that have been profitable over the last 100 years. Betting on technology to be the source of my particular revenue. Mm-hmm. Well, to be appropriately diversified, you need to allocate your portfolio into various types of stocks and bond groups. And Barb, you talked about this before. Large companies, small companies, growth companies, value companies, international companies, and so forth. Nobody knows out there what the difference is between a growth and a value. I don't think I've had a client that was able to really define for me the difference between a growth and a value company.
No.
But they are hugely different in the marketplace, how they react. So we also want to add to it high-quality short-term and intermediate-term bonds. And that's primarily for protection, to offset the volatility. Now, here's how an appropriately diversified portfolio can help insulate your portfolio in a market crash situation. You remember my previous example where we talked about the S&P 500 index was a 10% return average, and also had a standard deviation or range of 17%, mm-hmm. right? And that's 90% of the time over a given period of time. Well, how would we be able to appropriately diversify that portfolio to give us better protection? Well, here's how we would do it. First, what we do is we would split the portfolio 50% into S&P 500, which is fine. And the other 50% would be into what we call the total bond market. Now, we're not going to distinguish, you know, long-term from short-term and so forth. It's just all the bonds worldwide. Well, here's the result. Even if we just use a plain vanilla type approach like this, what kind of returns do we get? Well, quite frankly, we drop down in the return. it goes from 10% down to 8.84%.
It's not too bad.
That's not bad at all. That's a 12% reduction in return. Not a bad reduction, and it still stays fairly acceptable. But the biggest advantage is the reduction of risk. The standard deviation, or the range of return, drops from 17% down to 9%.
Oh, that's about half.
Yeah, it's 47% reduction in volatility. So it nearly cuts the risk in half by keeping it at an acceptable level. So clients will come in and they'll say, well, gosh, I know that I'm appropriately invested because, you know, I have all these holdings in my portfolio. I'm sure I'm diversified. But what Barb and I have found after we put the portfolio under the microscope is that they are, in fact, aggressively invested. They have many of their funds in high risk with very little appropriate diversification.
And, you know, I would tell our listeners to don't confuse sectors with asset classes. Mm-hmm. You know, sectors would be your technology, healthcare, financial, et cetera. But they could all be in the same asset class, which is probably large growth. The one thing to know is you have to know how you're invested, because there's something in the mutual fund industry called style drift, and that happens quite often. So, for instance, if you as an investor choose a fund and you think you're choosing a small company fund, well, mutual fund managers only have to have a certain percentage of companies in that small, quote unquote, fund. So when we analyze portfolios, we find that the entire fund is not with solely small companies. They only have to have a certain percentage in there. So you're really not getting all small companies. So therefore, you're underdiversified. Most portfolios that we analyze are underdiversified. And if you're underdiversified, it means you have more risk.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good explanation of not just only diversification, but as you mentioned, appropriate diversification. That's a big point of emphasis there. So let's wrap up our survival guide with this final lesson. And that's, don't try to time the market on the upside or the downside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Although states have loosened social distancing rules recently, now businesses have reopened. We've got the S&P 500 that's up 36% from the March 23rd low. Investor trading volume, if we look at that, that's up 35 to 50% on every online brokerage firm. Well, some say it could just be a bear market rally. But I was looking at a list of all of the 20 of the biggest daily percentage increases for just one indice now, just the Dow Jones Industrial Average that occurred during bear markets or crashes. Well, interestingly, three of these 20 best days in the stock market of history have occurred during the current pandemic. Now, this is going all the way back to the Great Depression. So if we look at March 13th, that was up 9.4%. It was up March 24th. The Dow was up 11.4% on that day. And April 6th, it was up 7.7% on that day.
Wow.
So keep in mind that our investors' portfolios here, balanced portfolio mix, had a 7% return in the entire second quarter. 7% up. It's come up back up, of course, in the second quarter. These, what I'm talking about, are days. So understand what you own in your mix of assets, but you can't cave in and go to cash. That's a serious mistake, and it could cost you your retirement, because if you sell out, you've just realized all those losses, and you may not recover. So stay in the market, because you need to know this, that no one can time the market. If you get out, you just miss those best days that I mentioned, which will affect your portfolio in the long run. And then if we look at people that got out of the market, Phil, back in 2009, mm-hmm. and the market bottomed out, and they're still sitting on the sidelines, and they've actually missed one of the greatest bull markets in history.
Yeah, it's just human nature, Barb and Ben, to try to predict what's going to happen next to us. You know, whether it's the weather tomorrow or whether it's our health, you know, we're asking a doctor, what are the possibilities of our health, you know, improving or not, our jobs. So why wouldn't they ask about stocks or the stock market? It's just natural. It's normal. But to try to time the market is a fool's errand. You cannot do it. It's not been done successfully. There's no system out there, no demand, and that's through Wall Street or the educational process that can show us how to time the market successfully. So that's why we say diversify appropriately.
Yeah, you can't. You'd have to be right on both sides of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point too, Barb. In fact, like with the market the way it's been this year, I mean, you miss one good day and you miss a significant jump in your value. So you don't want to try to get in and out. That's a great point for sure. So these are all lessons that you need to take into account and keep in mind before the next stock market crash. Bit of a survival guide for you, if you will. And that's the whole idea, is to get you ready for the next one, because it's going to happen again. And look, this one might not be over yet. Who knows? We don't know what the rest of 2020 holds, but it's important to have a plan in place. So build that plan, sit down, Barbara and Phil are there to help you if you need someone to help build your plan with. Pathfinder Wealth Management can do that for you. You can find them online, pathfinderwealth.com, or call the office, 815-399-9806. So, Barbara, Phil, thanks for the time today. I think this was a good conversation, and hopefully everybody will heed the warnings before the next stock market crash.
Amen.
Yes, stay safe.
You as well.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.